Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View here at BBSRadio.com, Station 2, every Monday evening, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, 11:55 Eastern. I am your humble host, PK, and I'm hosting this show. And I would like to thank BBS Radio for supporting free speech, free press, free inquiry, free discussion of ideas, and all of this without state, corporate, and Zionist control. So thank goodness for alternative media and the internet, which the powers that be would like to regulate, which I'm obviously totally opposed to. Don't mind paying miscellaneous fees to keep it going, because nobody works for free. As far as I know, pretty much. But I sure am glad we have alternative media. And I'm a fan of Julian Assange. If anybody would like to call in this evening, the number here is 888-429-5471. You can call in and ask any questions. On this show, I speak rather deeply about free market economics, the drug war, social issues, the wars, about limited government, politics, and I'm very critical of Israel and Zionism. So that's something that the road I continue to go down, and I don't pull any punches. I like to get cut to the chase with my solutions. I have a staunch libertarian background. I wouldn't consider myself an anarchist, but I would say that I'm a minarchist, which is pretty much the smallest sort of government possible. And in my world, that would just be enough government and micro taxes to support a strictly limited government's republic's constitution. Just enough to fund the things that I don't mind government doing. But whenever the market can provide those services, well, I wouldn't get in their way at all. And anarchists certainly will disagree with me, but the system I advocate, they'd sure like a lot more, because there would be no drug war, there's no draft, there's no draft registration. Now, this week, we're mourning what happened in Colorado. Not unlike a Columbine as far as killing innocent people. Obviously, it's a tragedy what happened. And what I hate about this sort of stuff is that, you know, ladies and gentlemen, it's hard enough to defend gun rights already, without idiots like this guy shooting up innocent people. And also, since I always rail against the drug war, there's so much crime, gun crime, committed through the drug war, that once again, it makes it so difficult to defend gun rights, because this stuff makes it even worse. And then the gun grabbers and or liberals, different statists, they jump on the bandwagon right away. See, if we had gun control, this sort of thing wouldn't happen. Other countries don't have this, da-da-da-da-da. You know, so it's very unfortunate. And there's always going to be some kook somewhere. I do like the reasoning of those who said if they didn't have these restrictive concealed carry laws, that someone else in the theater could have shot this idiot. And that's very possible. Of course, I heard it was kind of dark, and there was, I don't know if there was, someone said there was tear gas in there. I'm not sure what the visibility was like. However, that doesn't mean that an armed person wouldn't not necessarily have been shooting, sitting near the shooter, and would have found it easier to take him out. But, you know, I'd rather have that option than, you know, nothing to protect me at all. Ironically, last week, a senior citizen, I think a bit in northern Florida at a strip mall casino. He shot two young black guys who came in there. One had a baseball bat. They were threatening people and wanted to rob the place. And you can see it on video. He's shooting them. They got out, but they were captured pretty soon thereafter. But he shot them pretty good. So, you know, good for him. So, you know, that's an example of armed citizen. There was an armed senior citizen there, minding his own business, probably gambling, whatever was going on in there. And he wasn't going to be intimidated by these thugs. And believe me, if they were white thugs, they'd have been shot too. Or if they were Latin thugs, they'd have all been shot. Doesn't matter. I am sure that that white older gentleman would have popped whoever came in there threatening to harm or rob or steal or kill. Who knows? So, you know, from that standpoint, I'm sure he would have shot the bastards. And so that's what happened. I probably wouldn't shoot to kill. I'd shoot him in the legs. I think he hit one in the chest. I mean, depending how aggressive they were and what they were armed with. You know, if he's armed with a baseball bat and he's 10 feet away or 15 feet away, I'd rather shoot him in the arm or the leg. But I don't think many judges or juries or courts would be upset if they shot him elsewhere if they were that menacing. So that is, you know, that was the other side of the coin. But, yeah, I hate these awful, horrific murders of innocent people. Like a few years ago, that idiot in, was it Virginia Tech? Or was it Virginia? He shot all those people in the classroom. It was just awful. Now, if you want to compare the magnitude of what happened in Colorado, which I am in no way justifying, look at how many people the government kills. More innocent people shot by cops last week, going to the wrong address or whatnot. In Orlando, cops went to the wrong door, and the guy came to the door with a gun, and they shot him. He wasn't a criminal. He was wondering about who was out there. Cops didn't identify themselves, had no warrant or anything. So I don't blame it. I don't care if cops get shot under those circumstances. How are we supposed to defend ourselves? As Ayn Rand said, who will protect us from our protectors? Now back to this killing, which has been all the rage and all the news, of course, this horrific crime. And then this guy had, you know, he's pretty damn clever, actually. And there's no way it's a, it shouldn't be premeditated murder. Even though I'm not big on the death penalty, I wouldn't care if they execute this guy. It's not going to bring anybody's lives back. I don't know, it might give somebody some very temporary comfort, but, you know, it's not going to bring their loved ones back. But I got to hand this guy credit, man. He even, you know, he was clever. If you want to, you know, not praising him, but, you know, sort of complimenting him as far as the thoroughness of his evil deed and you know, to booby trap the apartment, that was pretty clever because he knew they'd come looking for clues. I wonder if the cops knew that it was booby trapped. I wonder if they suspected it or maybe heard one go off or tripped something, and that's what brought the rest off. But, I mean, this guy was pretty clever, so it was definitely premeditated. I wouldn't buy into this insanity crap at all, which the defense, I'm sure, will buy into. Someone made the comment of, well, how could this kid, this unemployed college grad, I think, how could he have, you know, $20,000 worth of, I guess, weaponry, which on the surface sounds very plausible. How the hell did this kid get that kind of money? I don't know if he had rich parents or whatever, but let's say he didn't. Where'd he get that kind of money? Well, if he had a credit card, as I read on some other posts, it's likely that he could have had a fairly high borrowing limit. So between that and whatever else he accumulated, he was able to come up with what he did. Now back to, if you compare it with government killings, look at all the innocent people killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. And last week, the Afghans, they popped 18 GIs. 18 U.S. soldiers died over there in America's longest war, 11 years. Obama's got his justifications for it. Romney would continue it, expand the military. It's like a joke. The country is seriously broke. Romney's a multimillionaire. Obama's a millionaire. They both know where their next meals are coming from. And they, you know, Obama signed the biggest military budget ever. Romney wants to add 100,000 more troops, you know. In spite of military suicides at an all-time high, military divorces at an all-time high, and military spousal abuses at an all-time high. Nevertheless, Ron Paul received the largest number of military donations, you know. And he made a good point the other day when I heard him speak. He said, you know, these, unless it was a former speech I watched on YouTube, I don't recall exactly, but he said, you know, these guys, these soldiers, they signed up to defend America, not to be constantly deployed overseas and following, you know, Bush's BS about, well, I got to fight them over there, so we don't have to fight them over here. Yeah, well, you keep provoking them over there, and it's going to end up over here. It's like you stirred up a hornet's nest. I get it. You know, and I'm not into this anti-American, I'm not, or shouldn't be a recipient of this anti-American BS, because I just know history and geography and human nature and human action. Of course these people are pissed off if you keep bombing them, killing their children, innocent people, occupying their country. What do you expect, Uncle Sam? You know, and aren't these young soldiers smart enough to know that Afghanistan is the graveyard of empires, especially Britain and Russia, although even Alexander the Great got bogged down there, I think. So anyway, back to if you look at the kill ratios, as bad as it was, as tragic and horrific as this killing was, in Colorado, the difference is that the government, it supposedly keeps us safe, kills a lot more people on a daily basis. And then they, you know, they puff themselves up like they're trying to help us. And, oh, if we'd have done this or would have done that, these people wouldn't have died. So I still haven't let that prick Eric Holder off the hook for what he did with Fast and Furious. And he said the former administration did it too. Well, you know what? Bring them to justice too. I think Holder should be tried for murder. Supplying automatic weapons to the Mexican drug cartel so they can trace where the shooters are, you know, trace it to the criminals using that. Do we understand the magnitude of that crime and he's going to get off or circumvent that? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's horrific to think that they can get away with that. You know, to me, it's unbelievable that they're getting away with this crap, providing weapons to criminals. I mean, if you or I did that, I don't know, they not necessarily call it treason, giving comfort to the enemy, perhaps, even though it's a different enemy. It's not the Taliban. It's the drug war. But you know, it's hard to believe that kind of crap is going down, that they keep getting away with that. And Americans just take it in stride, you know. Well, I guess this country feels pretty beat down. I do. And I don't even have, I mean, I'm still in the black. I'm financially pretty sound, but still very worried about the economy. Close ones and some family members, you know, unemployed, my friends, college graduates can't find jobs. You know, and Obama continues to make it worse. Meanwhile, Obama and Romney are, you know, taking pot shots at each other in the media. But, you know, that's about what it is. That's all it is. It's two sides of the same coin, because Romney and Obama, they both support the wars. They support expanding the military budget and widening the wars and drones. Romney loves drones. And like I've said before, when I first heard about these goddamn drones, I knew immediately, and I said so, that soon they would be coming within our country. And they are, because all those damn police departments, those gung-ho cops, many of which are veterans, they all want You know, they want more of this weaponry and this technology. And you see these military assault vehicles and whatnot that they have in their arsenals now. And, you know, as American citizens, how do we feel about that? You know, what the hell is our country turning into? Because I think the goddamn government is expecting or waiting for a showdown between the people and them. Because I see that with this buildup of the, you know, local cops' arsenals, which are, you know, quasi-military or paramilitary, I don't like what I see. And that combined with their drones, I don't know what the future lies, if there's going to be revolution or war. Or I hope there's no race war. I hope there's not food riots. I hope there's not civil war between the haves and the have-nots, because that's when the government will have the excuse to come in and kill more people. That's why we need as many veterans and cops and active duty to sign up with the Oath Keepers, who is an organization made up of former and active military who and police or other public officials who swear to uphold the Constitution, and hopefully they wouldn't fire on the American people in peaceful protests. And even if they're fairly violent protests, depending on what's coming at you, they shouldn't shoot down hundreds or thousands of people, especially if they're just throwing bricks or whatever, or rocks. That's the difference than the armed revolution. So, you know, I really don't want to see that. And I skip to a lot of subjects tonight, but I'm also making comparisons between the extremes of this and that. In fact, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago I talked about as bad as Jerry Sandusky was. Well, for example, he didn't kill all these people in the theater, and he didn't provide automatic weapons, hundreds of automatic weapons, to thugs in Mexico so they could supposedly trace where they went to. I wouldn't care if they tried and executed Holder for treason. A pathetic bastard. But he's a lawyer. Obama's a lawyer, and Romney's a lawyer. So many politicians and legislatures are lawyers. So they can continue to tweak and write the laws and twist the laws like that idiot Alan Dershowitz tries to do, justifying torture. What a prick, that guy. So, you know, the lawyers, they twist the laws. They look for some wiggle room. And, you know, personally, I would rather see no lawyers in the legislature or no lawyer politicians, because they write the laws to suit themselves. They know the complex myriad laws they've helped to create. And yes, it's a nation of laws, but there's too many laws, and we're so overregulated. I mean, even Frank Zappa said that it's a country of so many laws, many poorly written and not understood, and, you know, not obeyed, not enforced. It's ridiculous. I believe in the rule of law, but not endless laws enacted by either side of the coin because they're afraid of what's going on. Now, I'm a fan of Julian Assange, who they're trying to railroad, and also Private Bradley Manning, who's still in probably solitary confinement, that poor young guy, for supposedly leaking some government information. But I like whistleblowers because they let people know what's going on, and there's such a facade in this country. I can't even really watch the news anymore because I can see how it's so manipulated and twisted, and the sheeple just buy into it. But I will always be a maverick and a rebel with a cause. But here's a funny quote from Penn State University. The president of Penn State said, "We must create a culture in which people are not afraid to speak up." And the commentator wrote, "That's a great point. Does this mean that he is in full support of Julian Assange and his WikiLeaks organization?" I like that because it exposes secrets of government to the masses, because they like to keep us uninformed and in the dark. That's why the warmongers of the past, for example, FDR, LBJ, Wilson, Lincoln, Man, if there had been an internet back in the day, I hardly think that they would have gotten away with so much. I mean, they would have tried to censor it and whatnot, but that's why it's very important that the internet is not censored. And I'm pretty sure all governments would like to do that. And they like to misdirect information, too. Masters of deception. So I hate that bastard, Cass Sunstein, that Obama hired in his, like, ministry of distorting things. Sunstein thinks it's okay to lie, manipulate the truth, whatever it takes to censor information or any attempt to regulate the internet. Now, countries probably like China and North Korea regulate the internet. Is that what we want? It's just a facade that we're free in this country. I mean, look at TSA. Every week is more. It's just so pathetic. It's like I heard Aaron Neville say about, I don't know, about 7-8 years ago, that great singer from The Meters and his own stuff. I think he wrote Tell It Like It Is, or he sings on it. I remember him saying once, and it seems like an older black guy just saying, man, I don't even like to watch the news anymore. It's just so awful. He was just so depressed. I don't even like to watch the news anymore. And, of course, the news media dwells on tragedy. They hardly, you know, they don't talk about the good things as much as they do about the bad things. They prey on the negativity. But, yeah, the media, the corporate Zionist media, I can't even hardly watch it anymore. It's so biased. It's so skewed. You know, and the people, the sheeple don't put much of a fuss up to it. They just seem to, the masses seem to accept it, you know. Reminds me of a song Frank Zappa had. I think it's something to the effect of, America drinks and goes home. people think, oh, I'm an American, I'm free. But I think it hardly works that way when you really see what's going down and how much we're led to believe. I just think it's rather nonsensical. And I see we've given more loan guarantees and even more aid to Israel now, more weaponry. That is a scary situation. And Germany's going to pay billions more now to Holocaust survivors. Survivors. There sure are a lot of Holocaust survivors. What's that all about? You know, there's a lot of other survivors from World War II, from other horrific situations, but they don't get special privileges heaped upon them. If I was Germany, I'd tell Israel, go to hell. That's enough. We've paid enough. You've extracted enough out of us. Read The Holocaust Industry by Norman Finkelstein. And what's his other one? Is it Chutzpah? Of course, he's hated by the Jewish hierarchy because he speaks out against Zionists. And all Jews are not Zionists, but all Zionists are Jews. Plus the Christian Zionists, like Bush, probably Romney, that they are, Christians and believing that Israel's got to exist, the importance of Israel existing, it's biblical and all this. I know I've talked about this before in the past. I just like the hypocrisy of it all. Because most Jews are either purely secular and or agnostic and or atheistic, and they practice their religion as a tradition. So when you think of the state of Israel, Israel as some call it, I think of it as an apartheid terrorist state, but the humor part of me says, so you have these radical Jews who founded Israel, who are mostly atheist, socialist, communist, white atheist, socialist, communist, socialist Jews from Europe and Russia. So I've condensed it to, in a nutshell, quote, God gave us this land, end quote, shouted the atheist Zionist Jews. You know, so if you're an atheist, how does God give you the land? You know, I'm a non-militant atheist. I don't care if people celebrate what they celebrate and they put up their religious symbols in public squares. I mean, they used to do that in America. What was the big deal? America is a nation founded on religious freedom, among other things, but America has constitutionally protected religious freedom. And it's a nation of a Christian majority. I get that. That's how it is. But that's why I'm a non-militant atheist. I don't care if they pray in school. They used to. So what? Voluntarily, if they want to pray, fine. I don't care. Public schools shouldn't teach religion unless they teach. And that, then kids have to take all these extra damn classes. I mean, they could have a religion class that covered many religions without a criteria. It could cover Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Shinto, Confucianism, was it Santorchi, Judaism? Did I mention Islam? You know, could cover all those things without advocating any. You know, I just wouldn't care. It's not that big a deal. I'm not one of these nitpicking atheists. I want to have religious freedom, and I want to be left alone by religion. Stalin and the communists closed churches or destroyed them, although synagogues were seldom ever harmed. Well, that's because the main commissars, Stalin's commissars and architects of the purges and the murder of over 20 million Christians, were atheist Russian Jews. So even though they were Jews and they have a historical, you know, religious tie to the synagogue, those in charge, those Zionist, atheist Zionist Jews in charge in communist Russia back in the day, didn't harm the synagogues. It'd be like me if I was one of Stalin's henchmen. Let's say his henchmen and architects of the genocide of the Ukraine and the other Russian people. Let's say they were Christians. Okay, I, as one of his Christian henchmen, although I destroyed synagogues or maybe other churches, I wouldn't destroy Catholic churches because of my initial background. Now, on the other hand, Hitler never closed the churches. And I saw some very interesting footage that was sent to me by a friend last week, because I am curious as to, in terms of Jews in Europe and elsewhere, I'm curious as to, well, why have they been kicked out of so many countries? I operate with a concept of free inquiry. I want to know why. Because they're hated, discriminated against. Well, yeah, but why? Well, what are the details? I mean, I want the specifics. And, you know, what I've come up with is my own opinion. And it's not based on hate. But if, you know, Jews or others don't like it, well, that's too bad, because this is what I feel in my heart. Now, my criticisms are not followed by they should die or they should lose their rights or they should be killed. Uh-uh. And as I speak from my desk, who is above my desk on the wall? My picture of Ludwig von Mises, one of the greatest economists, social philosophers, and political thinkers of the 20th century. And he has a great quote that I have up by his picture, interestingly enough, because the word socialism gets battered around today and some foolishly defend it. But Mises said, and I think this was in his book Human Action, which was published in 1949, although he wrote it, I believe, in 1940. It's his magnum opus. But this is a Mises quote. There is no third system between the market, a market economy, and socialism. Mankind has to choose between those two systems unless chaos is considered an alternative. And I see chaos as the mixed economy. Look at Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. quasi-government institutions. Those are government. Those are a mixture of government and private institutions. And look at the mess they created. So, I know I'm jumping around here, but so much is relevant. And since I am a free market economist, self-taught, I have a very good overview of society and the economy. So this is how I am able to mix all these things together, because they're all relevant. Let's talk about the upcoming election. It's funny how the Republicans, the hierarchy in this, and the rank and file, condemn us if we don't like Romney and we say that we won't vote for Romney, and then they automatically say, well, then you're going to elect Obama. Well, you know, screw that. What's wrong with then you're picking on democracy. So what? You know, I can't stand Romney. I think he's an oily, stuffed shirt, used car salesman. No disrespect to used car salesman, but I mean, that's how he comes off. Very insincere. And, you know, my impression of Romney is to stick my finger up in the air and see which way the political winds are blowing. And that's the way I'll go. And it's laughable that we're supposed to toe the line, those of us who oppose Obama, as if the only choices we have are Romney and Obama. I mean, I can't stand either one of them. I think they're just two sides of the same coin. They have too much in common. And they both support and back the Israeli lobby. You know, American Jews a lot think that Obama hasn't been good to Israel and whatnot. Are you kidding me? The gravy train continues. It's just a facade. You know, so my vote is for Gary Johnson, former Republican governor of New Mexico. He's elected twice with pretty much, and that's a state with, I think, a Democrat majority. So he is the closest thing to Ron Paul. I'm not totally thrilled with his foreign policy, but he's the closest thing. And he doesn't want to attack Iran. He wants to end the drug war and decriminalize marijuana. I was debating a teacher friend last week about the drug war, and I couldn't believe that she was so close-minded and had so much fear about re-legalization and didn't really know anything. I mean, here's it, you know, I don't think a lot of teachers are all that smart. I'm not talking about really college, but other ones, high school and grade school. I mean, they know what they know, but you take them out of that sphere and they're not, I don't consider them very well-read or very broad, broad-minded or have a broad view about things. It seems like they know what they know. But I don't know, did they stop learning after they got out of college? I don't know, but this teacher, and she's a friend, a good friend, but, I mean, she has so much fear, and she's so incorrect. Her knowledge about the drugs and the drug war and, like, I mean, she sort of lumped them all together. I just couldn't, I couldn't believe I was talking to a teacher. You know, I'm thinking teachers are supposed to be educated. Of course, not in everything, but I mean, she just made no sense about the drug war. And, you know, and she's a Latin person. And I, even though I let her know that, you know, the drug war has racist origins, it was originally directed against Latins and blacks and later musicians. And, you know, she acknowledged that, but still believes in the drug war, and as opposed to legalization, or as I like to say, re-legalization. And she agreed that it's not working and that people who smoke marijuana shouldn't be put in prison. But, I mean, her whole reasoning was, I mean, I didn't even want to deal with her. I mean, it was pure ignorance coming from her part. You know, she couldn't hold her own in the debate. She didn't know facts. It was like based on fear and emotion. And I'm thinking, my goodness, we don't treat alcoholics this way. They have a problem. I've always said that the whole drug culture, the whole drug awareness should be, the policy should be education, prevention, rehabilitation, not prison, not a stupid drug war. The prisons are not full of alcoholics. Besides, alcohol is the gateway drug. And I was telling her, look, honey, the liquor store owners are not shooting each other. The buyers of alcohol are not shooting the liquor store owners back and forth. You know, they're not shuttling back and forth between liquor stores and shooting one owner and helping another or whatnot. It's just the crime factor went away. So it's, as much as I don't like regulations, I guess some is okay, but, you know, alcohol is regulated and it doesn't have, it's void of impurities like it didn't have back during the Prohibition days. So consequently, you don't have, there's not an alcohol war. You know, since people weren't around there, they don't remember how bad it was. Prohibition was awful. It corrupted the police, politicians, judges, courts. I mean, you know, it was awful. But it was over in about 13 years. The Volstead Act from 1919 to 1932, I believe it was, or 33, when FDR helped to overturn it or pushed for its cessation. And of course then the drug thing kicked in even more, because by 1937 then marijuana was made illegal. Ooh, oh no, horrors. So in 1936 it's hunky-dory, everything's okay, but then in 1937 all of a sudden marijuana is now illegal. To paraphrase Mises, only government could take an almost worthless weed, slap a bunch of laws on it, make it illegal, and make it worth its weight almost in gold. That paraphrase comes from Mises' description of the destruction of money, where only government could take a valuable commodity like money, like paper. Only government could take a valuable commodity like paper, slap some ink on it, and make it worthless, probably worth less than the paper it's printed on. All that inflation, all that constant creation of money. I mean, a good example besides 1923 Germany would be, what, 2007, 2008, if not earlier, Zimbabwe, where that idiot Mugabe's central bank printing trillions, you know, destroying the currency. You know, so if government is so against inflation or creating inflation, why do they persecuted counterfeiters? Is that the right phrase I saw? I saw that recently. I thought it was pretty good. Oh, my favorite thing I saw recently was, and I would ask Obama this, I would phrase it on this thing I saw, like, if Obama gets reelected, is he going to blame the previous administration for all his woes and for the way the economy is. The previous administration being his. Which I think is funny. So, I wonder how he would answer that. And then the audacity of Obama last week when he gave that stupid speech about, if you're successful, you didn't get there on your own. You had teachers to help you in roads and bridges. Well, I understand that. You know, we paid our taxes for all that stuff. Of course we've had teachers. But as far as, you know, innovation or figuring stuff out on your own, like, you know, like Henry Ford or Thomas Edison, Tesla, the Wright brothers, everybody's had somebody help them in the, you know, coming up, parents, teachers, we get that. But as far as being the entrepreneur or the driving force, like a Bill Gates or a Steve Jobs, they did that on their own. You know, they took what they learned and other people helped them with. But, you know, just the way Obama said it, I mean, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I don't gang up on him that much like the right does because, you know, the neocons who control talk radio and Fox, you know, very heavy Zionist power control, you know, they're always railing against Obama. Well, you know, Ron Paul rails against both sides, as I do. That's what's good about the mighty PK here, since I'm not a partisan. I'm registered Republican, so I can vote for, you know, Ron Paul in the primaries, but I don't support the Republican Party because I can't stand the Republican Party. I mean, unless it reformed itself and replaced the neoconservative wing, that tragic, awful neocon wing of the party, if they replaced that with the Ron Paul wing of the party and reinstituted the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, well, I'm there. Otherwise, it's the party of big government, of war, of empire, and a conservative welfare state. I'm fond of saying that, you know, conservatives and Republicans, they don't mind the federal welfare state as long as they're running it. You know, that's their mentality. That's what they do, you know. And a lot of the rank and file Republicans, they're, you know, they've really been hoodwinked. They've really been misled. You know, I think it'd be kind of cool to infiltrate the Democratic Party and have a revive its Grover Cleveland wing. Have Democrats for a sound economy, or Democrats against the war, or Democrats for welfare reform. Heard some interesting Black Tea Party speakers on YouTube. I was looking for Black Tea Party members, and there's a few, and to hear them speak was very interesting about the development of the welfare state and how it grew and displaced the Black father. Although I'm not sure if a lot of Black fathers, even before 1940 or whatnot, or maybe it was family structure was stronger, but this abandoning the family, I don't know if that's directly caused of the welfare state. As I understand it, in Africa, Black fathers do not desert families like as is often done in America. So, you know, I got my ear to the ground on this kind of stuff. I'm sensitive to other races and cultures. I have a insight on it. But that was interesting to hear these Black Tea Partiers speak. I'm not a Tea Party member, and my problem with the Tea Party from the beginning was that, of course, most of them are disgruntled Republicans, I think, but the Tea Party is too goddamn pro-war. Too militaristic, too pro-war. The wars are bankrupting the country. Let me repeat myself, ladies and gentlemen. The wars are equally bankrupting the country. The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have probably cost a couple trillion, okay? And what most of that's borrowed from China. And so the federal government is picking, you know, giving China a hard time. They're maneuvering with China or throughout the world strategically and whatnot. I think it's ridiculous game they're playing, geopolitics, that's going to end up taxing us more, causing more war, more grief. And I'm not a pacifist per se. You know, I'm very pro-gun rights, despite the Colorado tragedy, but I'm not for instigating and picking a fight. I've even debated this online. I said, I've had a couple guys come around from the neocon view. I said, you know, martial arts masters, they're badasses, but they do not go picking for fights or looking for fights. And if they do, or if they cause fights, then they've misused their art. So fortunately, martial arts masters do not go looking for trouble, do not go picking fights. If they did, they would meet their demise, I'm sure, because someone would realize, well, you know, we can't defeat you physically, but a bullet will. So, you know, there's that aspect of it. But generally speaking, you know, they don't do that. So neither should American foreign policy. Yes, we should have a military. It's in the Constitution. I have no problem with that, but it's the massive size of that and the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about. But I've expanded it. I call it the military-industrial congressional complex or congressional banking complex. Then you have the prison-industrial complex, thanks to St. Reagan and his stupid drug war, which Nixon started in 69, which is 42 years old this month, I believe. Idiot Nixon, Keynesian, started this drug war. And then St. Reagan really picked up on it. You know, Reagan, who says government's not is the problem, not the solution. You know, he started this massive drug war, and that has led to the prison-industrial complex. Prisons full of people who don't even belong there because of the drug war or nonviolent criminals. It's just awful. Then you have the pharmaceutical industrial complex. Favors within the state and their lobbyists. You know, every sixth commercial is like a drug, a pharmaceutical commercial. And hearing the side effects parts are laughable. After they talk about the drug, then they go, side effects are bleeding. If you notice bleeding, rapid heartbeat. And pregnant women should not use this. I mean, it's just the litany of the things that they ramble off during their towards the end of their pharmaceutical commercials. It's rather laughable, I think. So you have these, and of course the banking complex. You could call it the I've even said the military industrial banking congressional caucus or congressional banking caucus. The big banks are involved. And the majority of the big banks, as I understand it, of course, they're tied in to the Fed and the Rothschilds. They're under Zionist control. These are Talmudic Zionist Jews. It's their good old boy network. It's not the rank and file Jews. It's the Zionist crowd. That crowd, for example, Greenspan, Bernanke, Wolfowitz, Pearl, that awful Senator Lieberman, Israel's best senator, or favorite senator, Richard Pearl, Paul Wolfowitz, Robert Kagan, all these goddamn neoconservatives, these neocons. And a neoconservative, you know, they tend to be fairly good on economics, but awful on foreign policy. And the neocons, their mentor hero was German Jewish immigrant Leo Strauss, and he was sort of a right wing socialist. Even though he was Jewish, I think the Nazis would have welcomed this guy. You know, he thought lying and deceit is okay to achieve political goals. I mean, he gave it his blessing. And so a lot of these neocons are disciples of his. He taught in the University of Chicago, I believe. And, I mean, you know, this is part of the problem, this guy. And so you have this massive neoconservative influence. They're not opposed to the welfare state. They're pro-war, pro-empire, and fanatical supporters of Israel. So Israel was the created by the Rothschild crime family, basically. They funded the Knesset, as the Rockefellers funded the UN. I believe that the Rothschilds are the big players, as are the Rockefellers, and together they're in league. They're world advocates of world government and central banking. You'd be damn sure that David Rockefeller doesn't want to get rid of the Federal Reserve. That son of a bitch is still around. I think he's about 94. I saw a picture of him walking in the woods with Hillary Clinton. I don't know how long ago that was, but she's definitely a globalist. And hadn't she got some arrogance, making demands on Syria and this and that? She's basically doing the same foreign policy crap. And I'm surprised that the Obama supporters don't call her out on this or don't notice it, because it's pathetic. And, she keeps getting away with it. They do whatever they want. And the media is their lapdog. And the CIA is heavily involved in the media. So they manipulate the truth. They manipulate things, or they leave things out, half-truths. And then we're supposed to believe it all. Well, George Carlin was right when he said, don't believe anything the government tells you. I basically don't. I pretty much believe the opposite, I'd rather make profits, not war. But the war machine is so vast, as is the drug war machine, and these damn drones, they have these micros, these really small drones. I believe that they could come through your chimney or get into your house. I just hope that some of the geeks out there invent some technology that takes these damn drones out. So if you see them around, that you can just take them out. That electronically we can just crush them. I sure hope somebody comes up with that, because I'm sure that these pricks in government will then say they'll pass laws. Anybody caught disabling or shooting down a drone will be subject to criminal penalties. Yeah, the real criminals are the owners of the drones. The real criminals is the government alphabet soup agencies, CIA, FBI, DEA, FDA, FCC, FTC, the federal mafia, all those organizations I just mentioned, the Fed, the IRS, they are in league with the global mafia of the UN, the IMF, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, CAFTA, the Export-Import Bank. And for those who say, oh, there's no, these world government people, that's not what they want. That's all a facade. That's conspiracy theory. I say, oh, yeah? Oh, really? Well, let's try this. If we were to pull out of all those organizations I just mentioned, who would scream the loudest? The regular people, or those bastards who are involved in control and ownership of the Fed and the EU? And the IMF and the World Bank, all these statist globalist organizations, of course, which Clinton would support, Bush, Obama, Romney. That's what they support. And we're the ones that get screwed. And I don't mind talking about it, because on this show, I've got the balls to talk about it. I got the freedom and the balls to talk about it. And I cannot be intimidated with political correctness or threats, because it just ain't going to work. And I forgot to say hi to those pricks from the CIA and the NSA or FBI, anybody else listening to this show, because they hate this show. And they're, I hate to use the word fellow, but they're other Americans. And there's a bunch of these other American pricks who are oppressing the rest of us. I'm not talking about violent criminals. I'm just talking about those of us who are radical, who don't like what the government's doing, who don't like what the police are doing, who don't like the drug war, who don't like the wars. And I am not a leftist or a socialist of any stripe. I deplore all stripes of socialism. And I laugh at people who say, well, communism works good in theory or on paper. Oh, really? Communism works good. As stated in the Communist Manifesto, the destruction of property rights, the big central income tax, central bank. You know, it doesn't work on paper. And as Mises said, socialism or communism has a built-in failure mechanism. Because without a free price mechanism, you can't calculate prices. And prices determine how the economy operates. Prices are the signal that give producers and consumers very important information with which to budget and run their companies and their, you know, their families, their households. So in the former Soviet countries, they had price controls and whatnot. They made up prices. They made up, you know, they copied what they could from the West, but, you know, it was still BS because they had sort of like a command, well, sort of, they had a command economy where a factory boss would say, all right, you will produce this many tractors or this many pair of shoes, you know, and it wasn't linked to consumer demand. So that's how it had a built-in failure, because without a free price system, how are you going to calculate how much to make based on demand and what your costs are? You know, it's just ridiculous. So with that, my millions of fans, I have been able to wing it myself. It's not easy to talk an hour about different subjects or intellectual subjects, but I managed to pull it off again because I am the humble PK. And on this show, we talk about many different things, especially that involve politics or economics. I'm very fond of that speech that Al Pacino gave in the locker room for that football film on any given Sunday or something like that, where he says, on this team, we fight for that inch. So I'm really I've always been a Pacino fan, but I'm very – I see that a lot of inspiration out of that one. In fact, I prefer it to his speech in The Scent of a Woman, which I also liked. By the way, I think that's his greatest film ever. His acting was brilliant in that. But anyway, I'd like to thank my multitudes of listeners for tuning in here at Third Stream View with your humble host, PK, here. I'm here every Monday evening at BBS Radio, Station 2, 855 Pacific, 1055 Central, 1155 Eastern. So until next Monday evening, this is your humble host, PK, saying good night, everyone, and thanks for tuning in.